Chapter 91. I am surprised, apostrophe I began, to see you so distressed and serious as when she interrupted me. Yes, it's always so. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said. They are all surprised, these inconsiderate young people, fairly and full grown, to see any natural feeling in a little thing like me. They make a plaything of me, use me for their amusement, throw me away when they are tired, and wonder that I feel more than a toy horse or a wooden soldier. Yes, yes, that's the way. The old way. Apostrophe, it may be, with others, apostrophe I returned, but I do assure you it is not with me. Perhaps I ought not to be at all surprised to see you as you are now. I know so little of you. I said, without consideration, what I thought. Apostrophe, what can I do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the little woman, standing up, and holding out her arms to show herself. See, what I am, my father was, and my sister is, and my brother is. I have worked for sister and brother these many years hard, Mr. Copperfield, all day. I must live. I do no harm. If there are people so unreflecting or so cruel as to make a jest of me, what is left for me to do but to make a jest of myself, them, and everything? If I do so, for the time, whose fault is that? Mine? Apostrophe, no. Not Miss Mocher's, I perceived. If I had shown myself a sensitive dwarf to your false friend, apostrophe pursued the little woman, shaking her head at me, with reproachful earnestness, how much of his help or goodwill do you think I should ever have had? If little Mocher, who had no hand, young gentleman, in the making of herself, addressed herself to him, or the like of him, because of her misfortunes, when do you suppose her small voice would have been heard? Little Mocher would have as much need to live, if she was the bitterest and dullest of pygmies, but she couldn't do it. No. She might whistle for her bread and butter till she died of air. Apostrophe, Miss Mocher sat down on the fender again, and took out her handkerchief, and wiped her eyes. Be thankful for me, if you have a kind heart, as I think you have, apostrophe, she said, that while I know well what I am, I can be cheerful, and endure it all. I am thankful for myself, at any rate, that I can find my tiny way through the world, without being beholden to anyone, and that in return for all that is thrown at me, in folly or vanity, as I go along, I can throw bubbles back. If I don't brood over all I want, it is the better for me, and not the worse for anyone. If I am a plaything for you giants, be gentle with me. Apostrophe, Miss Mocher replaced her handkerchief in her pocket, looking at me with very intent expression all the while, and pursued. I saw you in the street just now. You may suppose I am not able to walk as fast as you, with my short legs and short breath, and I couldn't overtake you, but I guessed where you came, and came after you. I have been here before, today, but the good woman wasn't at home. Apostrophe, do you know her? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I demanded. I know of her, and about her, apostrophe, she replied, from Omer and Joram. I was there at 7 o'clock this morning. Do you remember what Steerforth said to me about this unfortunate girl, that time when I saw you both at the inn? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the great bonnet on Miss Mocher's head, and the greater bonnet on the wall, began to go backwards and forwards again, when she asked this question. I remembered very well what she referred to, having had it in my thoughts many times that day. I told her so. May the father of all evil confound him, apostrophe said the little woman, holding up her forefinger between me and her sparkling eyes, and 10 times more confound that wicked servant, but I believed it was you who had a boyish passion for her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I repeated. Child, child. In the name of blind ill fortune, apostrophe cried Miss Mocher, wringing her hands impatiently, as she went to and fro again upon the fender, why did you praise her so, and blush, and look disturbed? Apostrophe, I could not conceal from myself, that I had done this, though for a reason very different from her supposition. What did I know? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Miss Mosher, taking out her handkerchief again, and giving one little stamp on the ground whenever, at short intervals, she applied it to her eyes with both hands at once. He was crossing you and wheedling you, I saw, and you were soft wax in his hands, I saw. Had I left the room a minute, when his man told me that young innocence, so he called you, and you may call him old guilt all the days of your life, had set his heart upon her, and she was giddy and liked him, but his master was resolved, that no harm should come of it more for your sake than for hers, and that that was their business here? How could I but believe him? I saw Steerforth soothe, and please you by his praise of her. You were the first to mention her name. You owned to an old admiration of her. You were hot and cold, and red and white, all at once when I spoke to you of her. What could I think, what did I think, but that you were a young libertine in everything but experience, and had fallen into hands that had experience enough, and could manage you having the fancy for your own good. Oh, 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 they were afraid of my finding out the truth, apostrophe exclaimed Miss Mosher, getting off the fender, and trotting up and down the kitchen with her two short arms distressfully lifted up, because I am a sharp little thing I need be, to get through the world at all. And they deceived me altogether, and I gave the poor unfortunate girl a letter, which I fully believe, was the beginning of her ever speaking to Littimer, who was left behind on purpose. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I stood amazed at the revelation of all this perfidy, looking at Miss Mosher as she walked up and down the kitchen until she was out of breath. When she sat upon the fender again, and, drying her face with her handkerchief, shook her head for a long time, without otherwise moving, and without breaking silence. My country rounds, apostrophe, she added at length, brought me to Norwich, Mr. Copperfield, the night before last. What I happened to find there, about their secret way of coming and going, without you, which was strange, led to my suspecting something wrong. I got into the coach from London last night, as it came through Norwich, and was here this morning. Oh, 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 too late. Apostrophe, poor little Mosher turned so chilly after all her crying and fretting, that she turned round on the fender, putting her poor little wet feet in among the ashes to warm them, and sat looking at the fire, like a large doll. I sat in a chair on the other side of the hearth, lost in unhappy reflections, and looking at the fire too, and sometimes at her. I must go, apostrophe, she said at last, rising as she spoke. It's late. You don't mistrust me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, meeting her sharp glance, which was as sharp as ever when she asked me, I could not on that short challenge answer no, quite frankly. Come. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said she, accepting the offer of my hand, to help her over the fender, and looking wistfully up into my face, you know you wouldn't mistrust me if I was a full-sized woman. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I felt that there was much truth in this, and I felt rather ashamed of myself. You are a young man, apostrophe, she said, nodding. Take a word of advice, even from 3 foot nothing. Try not to associate bodily defects with mental, my good friend, except for a solid reason. Apostrophe, she had got over the fender now, and I had got over my suspicion. I told her that I believed she had given me a faithful account of herself, and that we had both been hapless instruments in designing hands. She thanked me, and said I was a good fellow. Now, mind. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she exclaimed, turning back on her way to the door, and looking shrewdly at me, with her forefinger up again. I have some reason to suspect, from what I have heard my ears are always open. I can't afford to spare what powers I have, that they are gone abroad. But if ever they return, if ever any one of them returns, while I am alive, I am more likely than another, going about as I do, to find it out soon. Whatever I know, you shall know. If ever I can do anything to serve the poor betrayed girl, I will do it faithfully, please heaven. And Littimer had better have a bloodhound at his back than little Mosher. apostrophe apostrophe, I placed implicit faith in this last statement, when I marked the look with which it was accompanied. Trust me no more, but trust me no less, than you would trust a full-sized woman, apostrophe said the little creature, touching me appealingly on the wrist. If ever you see me again, unlike what I am now, and like what I was when you first saw me, observe what company I am in. Call to mind, that I am a very helpless and defenseless little thing. Think of me at home with my brother, like myself, and sister like myself, when my day's work is done. Perhaps you won't, then, be very hard upon me, or surprised if I can be distressed and serious. Good night. Apostrophe, I gave Miss Mocher my hand, with a very different opinion of her from that which I had hitherto entertained, and opened the door to let her out. It was not a trifling business, to get the great umbrella up, and properly balanced in her grasp, but at last I successfully accomplished this, and saw it go bobbing down the street through the rain, without the least appearance of having anybody underneath it, except when a heavier fall than usual from some overcharged water spout sent it toppling over, on one side, and discovered Miss Mocher struggling violently to get it right. After making one or two sallies to her relief, which were rendered futile by the umbrella's hopping on again, like an immense bird, before I could reach it, I came in, went to bed, and slept till morning. In the morning I was joined by Mr. Peggotty, and by my old nurse, and we went at an early hour to the coach office, where Mrs. Gummidge and Ham were waiting to take leave of us. Master Davy, apostrophe Ham whispered, drawing me aside, while Mr. Peggotty was stowing his bag among the luggage, his life is quite broke up. He didn't know where he's going. He didn't know what's afore him. He's bound upon a voyage that'll last, on and off, all the rest of his days, take my word for it, unless he finds what he's a-seeking of. I am sure you'll be a friend to him, Master Davy? Apostrophe, trust me, I will indeed, apostrophe said I, shaking hands with Ham earnestly. Thank ye, very kind, sir. One thing further. I'm in good employ, you know, Master Davy, and I ain't no way now of spending what I gets. Money's of no use to me no more, except to live. If you can lay it out for him, I shall do my work with a better art. Though as to that, sir, apostrophe and he spoke very steadily and mildly, you're not to think, but I shall work at all times, like a man, and act the best that lays in my power. Apostrophe apostrophe, I told him I was well convinced of it, and I hinted that I hoped the time might even come when he would cease to lead the lonely life he naturally contemplated now. No, sir, apostrophe he said, shaking his head, all that's past and over with me, sir. No one can never fill the place that's empty. But you'll bear in mind about the money, as fears at all times some laying by for him? Apostrophe apostrophe, reminding him of the fact that Mr. Peggotty derived a steady, though certainly a very moderate income from the bequest of his late brother-in-law, I promised to do so. We then took leave of each other. I cannot leave him even now, without remembering with a pang, at once his modest fortitude and his great sorrow. As to Mrs. Gummidge, if I were to endeavor to describe how she ran down the street by the side of the coach, seeing nothing but Mr. Peggotty on the roof, through the tears she tried to repress, and dashing herself against the people who were coming in the opposite direction, I should enter on a task of some difficulty. Therefore I had better leave her sitting on a baker's doorstep, out of breath, with no shape at all remaining in her bonnet, and one of her shoes off, lying on the pavement at a considerable distance. When we got to our journey's end, our first pursuit was to look about for a little lodging for Peggotty, where her brother could have a bed. We were so fortunate as to find one, of a very clean and cheap description, over a chandler's shop, only two streets removed from me. When we had engaged this domicile, I bought some cold meat at an eating house, and took my fellow travelers home to tea, a proceeding, I regret to state, which did not meet with Mrs. Krupp's approval, but quite the contrary. I ought to observe, however, in explanation of that lady's state of mind, that she was much offended by Peggotty's tucking up her widow's gown, before she had been 10 minutes in the place, and setting to work to dust my bedroom. This Mrs. Crupp regarded in the light of a liberty, and the liberty, she said, was a thing she never allowed. Mr. Peggotty had made a communication to me on the way to London for which I was not unprepared. It was that he purposed first seeing Mrs. Steerforth, as I felt bound, to assist him in this, and also to mediate between them. With the view of sparing the mother's feelings as much as possible, I wrote to her that night. I told her as mildly as I could what his wrong was, and what my own share in his injury. I said he was a man in very common life, but of a most gentle and upright character, and that I ventured to express a hope that she would not refuse to see him in his heavy trouble. I mentioned 2 o'clock in the afternoon as the hour of our coming, and I sent the letter myself by the first coach in the morning. At the appointed time, we stood at the door of that house where I had been, a few days since, so happy, where my youthful confidence and warmth of heart had been yielded up so freely, which was closed against me henceforth, which was now a waste, a ruin. No Littimer appeared. The pleasanter face which had replaced his, on the occasion of my last visit, answered to our summons, and went before us to the drawing-room. Mrs. Steerforth was sitting there. Rosa Dartle glided, as we went in, from another part of the room and stood behind her chair. I saw, directly, in his mother's face, that she knew from himself what he had done. It was very pale, and bore the traces of deeper emotion than my letter alone, weakened by the doubts her fondness would have raised upon it, would have been likely to create. I thought her more like him than ever I had thought her, and I felt, rather than saw, that the resemblance was not lost on my companion. She sat upright in her armchair, with a stately immovable passionless air, that it seemed as if nothing could disturb. She looked very steadfastly at Mr. Peggotty, when he stood before her, and he looked quite as steadfastly at her. Rosa Dartle's keen glance comprehended all of us. For some moments not a word was spoken. She motioned to Mr. Peggotty to be seated. He said, in a low voice, "I shouldn't feel it natural, ma'am, to sit down in this house. I'd sooner stand." Apostrophe, and this was succeeded by another silence, which he broke thus. "I know, with deep regret, what has brought you here. What do you want of me? What do you ask me to do?" Apostrophe, he put his hat under his arm, and feeling in his breast for Emily's letter, took it out, unfolded it, and gave it to her. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.